You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. The sound of the starter in another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. Welcome to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, the Saturday edition of Roto Experts. I'm here with George Kurtz. I will be here for the next 2 hours taking you around the horn with MLB, and we're going to get into a lot more football this week than we have previously. We've got Gary Davenport coming up in the 9 o'clock hour to take us through some of the bigger stories that we'll see going into the 2017 fantasy football season. And George, welcome to the show this morning. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for hanging out. And the couple of games that I focused on last night, the first one I'll focus on is Yankees-Rangers. We had a pitching matchup with, you know, certainly one pitcher from the Yankees' perspective that has been disappointing, to say the least. You had Yu Darvish, which, look, he's had a good season, but maybe not as dominant as some fantasy owners would like. That being said, they both came out and pitched really well last night.
Yeah, that was an interesting game last night. Almost had a two-hour rain delay due to some thunderstorms in the Bronx, and then they come out and both pitchers pitched well, very well. I think you put it correctly. Darvish has been good, but not maybe as great as some expected this year, and Tanaka's been a dumpster fire. Really terrible, but last night looked good. Now, maybe facing his countrymen, and Darvish really brought out the best in Tanaka. You know, maybe he's figured it out. Maybe it's one game. Who knows? But it's certainly a good sign. And now you just know everyone's going to rush to the waiver wire. You know, because Tanaka's on the waiver wire in quite a few leagues. People dumped him, and I don't blame him. But now people are going to go back because they're going to believe. Yeah, so that should be interesting to see what happens there. But good sign there if you're a Yankee fan, which you and I are. Good sign with Tanaka. Maybe he's figured it out. But I'm going to need another start, Mike, before I put him back in my starting lineup.
Yeah, I did happen to start him last night. I jumped on him a couple of weeks ago. I figured, you know, pick him up when things weren't going too well for him. Unfortunately, it's been a bumpy road even since I picked him up. There's been some bad starts and mixes in last night with a good one. Now, neither pitcher factored in the decisions. Darvish goes 7-2, hits 10 Ks, really dominating. Tanaka, 8 innings, 3 hits, a couple of walks, and 9 Ks, but the game is all decided late. Rangers score in the top of the 9th. Brett Gardner comes back, bottom of the 9th, hits a game-tying homer, and then the Yankees walk it off. Ronald Torres walks it off in the 10th inning. Not a ton of offense there, obviously, based on the pitching performances. Matt Busch takes a loss. Jason Shreve, of all guys, gets the win, George.
Yeah, and listen, Shreve did his best to try and make that interesting as well.
Yeah, he did.
In the 10th inning, walking batters, putting them on base. Yankee defense has been not the best of late, especially the middle infielders. Gregorius and Castro are having some issues with catching the ball. Never a good thing there. But hey, like I said, you're a Yankee fan, you escape with the win. Chapman didn't look good either. He doesn't have much control there. And my God, was that man sweating last night. I know it was hot, but he literally had sweat pouring off the brim of his cap. You generally don't see that for a reliever.
Yeah. Gary Sanchez, Jonathan Lucroy, and Elvis Andrus, the only guys that pitched in with multiple hit games. So we'll see if Chapman can get it figured out. It has been not a great season for him, even if the numbers have been there on some level. We all know from watching him it has been a bumpy road. So we'll come back. We'll talk about Alex Wood, 8-0 on the season. Mike and George and Roto Experts for the next 2 hours. Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Hit us up on Twitter today at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. But feel free to hit us up with any questions of any kind, baseball, football. You have concerns. You love the show and you want to tell us so much about how much you love it. Feel free to do that as well. We're going to get into George's closer report a little bit later.
Lots of those phone calls are coming.
Well, by the way, if they want to call us, they can call us at 844-843-6879, 84-FNTSY. Call us and tell us how much you like George. He would really appreciate that. We're going to talk a little bit about the closer report, which you can find in the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package. Each and every week, George releases it on Tuesday. It gives you an update, some good updates this week, so I'm excited to get to that. And you can stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights. So enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. Not to mention that we have the NFL exclusive Edge draft package is now available. So feel free to go there as well and get an edge on all of the competition. So, George, next game I wanted to talk about was, it's really unbelievable. Every time we look at the Dodgers, it feels like the young guys are contributing in such a massive way, and last night was no different. Alex Wood moves to 8-0 on the season. He only goes six innings, but gives up just the one run and seven strikeouts. He's undefeated.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Dodgers. They're a team that could be dangerous. But now, we did receive some bad news for the Dodgers yesterday. Julio Urias is having anterior capsule surgery, so he is not only is a season more than likely over, his career could be in jeopardy. This is a very serious surgery for a pitcher. Or at the very least, he may never be the same pitcher he was as far as a top prospect. So certainly not good news there. But there is good news, Clive. I mean, Bellinger is the real deal. Yeah, this kid's got, 22 home runs, 21 home runs. Mm-hmm. I think he's the fastest. He's got five multi-home runs. It's the fastest a rookie has ever gotten to multi-home runs in a game. So, real deal. He's had a lot of energy to that team. Even Yasiel Puig is hitting.
Yes.
You know, you're throwing Seager. Seager got hurt last night. You know, after hitting a double or going to a second on day, throw home. I pulled up a little lame with a hamstring cramp, hamstring soreness, hamstring pull. We don't really know the severity of it yet, but that's not good news. So that could be a problem. But other than that, all signs are pointing green for the Dodgers. I think eventually they will run away with that division.
Yeah, so Seager comes out of the game. Guess who comes in? Yasiel Puig, and he hits a home run. It's 14th of the season, as George said. Now he's hitting. Bellinger has a 2-RBI double last night. I heard a stat the other day on some station, George, that Cody Bellinger already has more home runs than his dad, Clay Bellinger, did for his entire career, and he's just done it in here in a couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, Clay Bellinger was the 25th man on a 25-man roster.
That's right.
That's what he was. Yeah. He was jack of all trades, though, played all the positions, valuable, but never a starting player. Yet. So that's actually not a surprise stat there. Also, let you know just how good Bellinger is.
Yeah, 2000 World Series champ Clay Bellinger. I met him years ago. Nice guy, but obviously doing a really good job raising a prodigy of a baseball player. So Kiki Hernandez with a hit, Taylor hit, Gutierrez hit. You know, they piled up 11 hits on Freeland last night of the Rockies, who was really good his last time out, but takes it on the chin last night. 10 hits, 5 earned runs, and the Dodgers get the win 6-1. A game I watched a little bit of last night, George, was was Red Sox Angels, and our guy Meyer, the freakish sort of 6'10 guy, he just could not get it together, really lacked control, was getting hit around the park, and the Sox end up taking this game 9-4. A couple of things stood out in this game. Bogaerts 2-for-4. Jackie Bradley is the guy I really wanted to talk about because he is now hitting 360 in June. But the odd part is, and he got a couple more hits last night. It was, yeah, he went 2-for-3, two runs scored. Sandy Leon, by the way, hit a home run. He goes 3-for-4 last night with 4 RBIs. And Hanley Ramirez hit a home run last night with one guy on. So that's his 10th of the season. But the interesting thing about Jackie Bradley, I really like him as a player. But despite the fact that he was so cold early and now he's red hot, 360 in June, he's only got 3 homers and no stolen bases this month. So I bring this up to you to say, it's really great that he's doing that, and certainly in deeper leagues, he's a guy that's really helping out your average a lot. But he doesn't appear to be adding much beyond that. So I kind of, when he came into the majors, because I watched him play a little bit at South Carolina, I thought he'd be a little bit more of a runner, and he's only got 2 stolen bases on the season. He does have 9 homers, so there is some power there, but I guess that just kind of stands out to me. Despite the fact that he's red hot, there's not a ton of run production.
He is red hot. He's turned the season around. First, in probably April, maybe even half of May, he was one of the bigger disappointments this season, to put it nicely. So it's good to see that he's, like I said, figured it out. The power hasn't been there that long compared to what it was last year. I agree with you about the stolen base. I expected more speed. I do own a share or two of Bradley. But he is what he is right now. He's not taking advantage, him and Bogaerts for that matter, of the baseball, maybe being a little bit more tightly wound, or the seams being lower, whatever it might be.
Do you think that's a fact, by the way?
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, just probably. I don't know if, as far as the scenes being low, I don't know if that was something baseball would do on purpose.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just, you know, better equipment technology nowadays is being some of that stuff. You know, I don't, it's not like home runs are down low that much. So, I don't know. I don't know what to think there. And I really don't want to get into it. But, you know, deal with it. What do I care?
Yeah. We're not changing it now.
No, they're certainly not going to. Pitchers are always going to complain. It's never their fault.
Yeah.
You know, stop throwing balls right down Broadway.
It's an excellent point. The pitcher is very likely to blame his tools as opposed to himself.
Yeah, so like I said, I'm on board with Bradley. I'm keeping him, but he's not the player he was last year as far as, oh, my God, he's putting up MVP-type numbers almost where he was a must-start hitting all the categories for you, for your team. He's not doing that this year. Maybe he won't, but he still has value, so he's not someone who should be on your bench.
Yeah, so furthermore in this game, Rick Porcello gets the win, moves to 4-9 on the season. He's been released by plenty of people, but he goes 6 3 last night, had 8 strikeouts, 3 earned runs. A pretty nice outing for Porcello, so hopefully this is the sign, much like Tanaka, this is the sign of things turning in the right direction.
Well, it's one game against the Angels, not the best hitting team, regardless of how the Yankees play, pitched against them. So I don't think you want to go overboard here again. If you're comparing what Porcello did to what Tanaka did, I'm more encouraged about Tanaka because it was against a better hitting team. You know, Porcello, another guy I don't want to give up on, but I don't have much faith because he's not a big strikeout guy anyway. So, you know, now you're down to 3 categories. The ratios have taken a hit. His ERA is up above almost 1.5. That's terrible. You know, when you look at his numbers, his walk rate is up, hit rate is up. That's where the problem is. Strikeout rate's about the same. So it's really, he's just getting hit more, and he's not hitting his locations at times, which is why the walk rate is slightly up. The walk rate's not terrible, but it's up. So he's just not hitting his locations right now. You would think that would improve.
He did give up 8 hits last night, 2 to Yunel Escobar, 2 to Cole Calhoun, a couple of Andrelton Simmons. You know, the one thing I saw last night in this game, George, which bugged me, is Bogarts was on first. There was a ball hit up the middle. They're trying to turn a 4-6-3, I believe it was, and Andrelton Simmons is trying to throw the ball over to first. Bogarts takes him out, as we've seen millions of times in baseball throughout history, and he gets called out for interfering. He had his hands up, and he kind of touched Simmons, but he slid basically right into the base. The irony is that ultimately he kind of stopped short and rolled to the side and never technically touched the base, but he was online with it and they called him out. They called the runner out. They called the double play. So they called interference on Bogarts. And I'm starting to get to the point where I'm even a little confused as to what the rules are. We saw the Chris Bryant play Anthony Rizzo play a couple of days ago, and now this last night, and I feel like I'm a little confused as to what is going to be called and what garners an ejection, what garners an out, and et cetera. Do you feel the same way?
I'm trying to find a video now that I did not see this. So I'm trying
catch
to
it during the break. We could talk about it after
about,
the break.
Yeah.
But even on the Rizzo thing, like, I didn't think what Rizzo did was a dirty play, but I thought it warranted an ejection, you know what I mean? Like, by rule, I thought it's that guy gets thrown out for that.
We'll talk more about it after the break, but I did think what Rizzo did was dirty, and I'll explain why after.
All right, sounds good. It's a good tease. That's what they call it in the biz. That's a tease. George and I will be back after the break to talk about why Anthony Rizzo is a dirty player and why Xander Bogarts might be too. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Welcome back. Roto Experts in the Morning. George and I are going to talk a little bit about dirty play right here, or what he thinks is dirty play. I didn't think it was that dirty. George, one thing I would say about the Dodgers, just going back there real quick. I'm sorry, I got caught. My producer told me exactly when we were coming back, and I'm a fat jerk, so I had some food right before he came on, so I'll take care of that in a second. But George, Kenley Jansen, I was just watching the other night. I know this outing happened a couple of nights ago, but again, he gets through a clean outing. It's up to 50 strikeouts without a walk. It's really crazy. I know there's other closers that have had similarly dominant seasons, but nobody quite like this. It's kind of amazing that he just has that level of pinpoint control.
Yeah, I think it's more than 50, by the way. I know it was 50 on the nose a couple of days ago when I checked, and he's added to that now. You want to get to the Dodgers before the ninth inning. You know, you're there up in the ninth inning, game's over. You must just go home and pack up. It's an eight-inning game right now in L.A. Jansen's having a fantastic season, unhittable, and he's certainly not going to put you on base for free. Good for Canley. Maybe the Yankees signed the wrong closer.
Yeah, he's 439 pitches on the season, 336 for strikes. 153 batting average against. It is still 50, actually. So last time out, he didn't pitch the last couple of nights. So still 50 on the nose. In any event, that was a quick note. So getting back to, this obviously happened a few nights ago, play at the plate. Anthony Rizzo comes home. Austin Hedges catching for the Padres, and he has the ball in plenty of time. Rizzo's dead to rights. Hedges kind of moves out of the way, gives Rizzo a path, and Rizzo nailed him. The managers were at odds as to what the definition of the rule is. I can only react. The best way to react is the first time you saw it. And the first time I saw it, I shrugged my shoulders and I looked at the screen. I was like, how is he not thrown out for that? So I didn't think it was an egregiously dirty play. But at the same time, the rule is there to protect these guys. And George, I couldn't. You're going to say it's dirty, and I want to hear your reasons why, and I don't know that I could be that strong against your take.
Well, you know, when you say it's dirty, it's not like it's my guy. It's a Ty Cobb going in spikes first here. The reason it's dirty is you already sort of stated the reason. The catcher moved out of the way. The entire plate was open to slide into. All right, in this day and age, the rule is you can't take out the catcher in that situation. He's giving you the plate to slide on. And truth is, why would you want to slide into him anyway? I'll never understand baseball players who do this. You're sliding into a catcher who's loaded with equipment. I mean, you know, he's got the shin guards, the chest protector, the mask. It's all hard equipment. It's how you get hurt. Like, he had the plate to slide into. If you slide into the catcher, you're out. I mean, you're not going to be able to knock that ball. If you're going to bowl him over, that's different. That would also be a dirty play, but at least then you have a chance of knocking the ball loose. Sliding out, the only thing you're going to do is you're out and maybe hurt yourself. Now, in this case, because of how we slid, and this is the problem here, he slid in high, yeah, almost knee first, and that's the other issue here. Something should have happened here. I mean, as far as a suspension, as far as a minimum a fine. This is what baseball wants to get rid of, right? He blatantly disregarded the rules. Joe Madden can say whatever he wants. I like Joe Madden, but sometimes he's out there. You know, once again, they protect their players. So if someone did this to Wilson Contreras, Madden would be having a heart attack.
He gave a very lucid argument, and he stated it with conviction, but I thought he was wrong. I just thought what he said was flat out not right. It's not the intention of the rule, and you're not allowed to hit guys when they give you the plate.
Right. Plus, there's just no point to it. You want to listen? I'll go back to Joe Madden for a second. Earlier in the week, I think it was maybe Monday, Rizzo hit that controversial home run. You know, and it ended up being the umpires originally called it fair, and then they called it foul, and then it goes to replay, and Madden went bananas there. You know, he was all upset there. And he actually said in the post-game conference, I don't care if they got the call right. The process was wrong. What?
Yeah. The point is the call.
What did you just
the
say,
point
Joe?
Is get the call right.
Exactly. That's the point. Now, I understand the reason why they were so upset is because, well, if it's called foul on the field, then you need evidence to make it fair, and obviously vice versa. He wanted it to be called fair on the field so that, you know, it'd be harder to overturn here. But the goal of everything is to make sure the call is right. So I lost a lot of respect for Matt as soon as I heard that. I don't care if the call was right. What? What are you talking about? You don't care. That's the idea. Get the call right. That's what instant replay is supposed to do. It worked perfectly. And you can clearly see on the video the ball was foul. Mm-hmm. So like I say, Rizzo going off and Madden going off. Yeah, I understand you got to protect your players sometimes. And, you know, even when they act like idiots and they're wrong. But to do something it makes you look so obviously bad, I don't understand it. And the same thing with the Rizzo slide. That, yeah, it was obvious what he did. You know, I don't know if he's still angry, if he's mad all week, but why you would do that is beyond me. The rule is there to protect these players. I have no problem with you barreling over the catcher. I mean, you can knock him into next Thursday as long as he's blocking the plate. If he's not giving you anywhere to go, go ahead, hit him. And catchers still do block the plate. The rule is, you know, once they have the ball, and they clearly have the ball, in other words, where they can see the runner is coming, they can block it. But until that, they can't. They can't. So, like I said, I think this was a dirty play by Rizzo. I think something should have been done by baseball. You want to send a message not to have this. And I also wonder, you know, let's say this is not Rizzo, a star in the game. What if this is, you know, Ronald Torres? Does the still discipline still apply, or in this case, lack of discipline?
Yeah, like Reyes hits Torres hits Buster Posey if they're playing an interleague game. Does Torres get tossed because of who's involved? I always think that that's a factor. There's a human factor involved, and I always think that's going to be an issue, especially when it's a very likable guy like Anthony Rizzo. Frankly, you know, I think he has a really good sense about him between managers amongst other players. I think he's extremely well liked. So how much does that paint it? I think it's ridiculous to say that that doesn't play a factor as much as umpires would like to say that they're down the middle and they're judge, jury, and executioner, and they don't look at that kind of stuff. If a player is treating them with respect, I was reading an article about Joe West the other day, and he has a whole approach to how, or rules as to how, young players that he's meeting for the first time should introduce themselves to him. And he holds it against them if they don't. You know, it will read them the Riot Act if they don't properly introduce themselves the first time they meet him.
Joe West is a joke. I mean, it's amazing he still has a job.
5,000 games he managed umpired earlier this week.
Yeah, but we all know that Joe West wants to be part of the game. Yeah. Always has. You know, and what do they say about the umpires and referees? The best ones, you don't know their names, and you never hear from them.
Yeah.
It's very true. There's a reason why Joe West has the nickname Cowboy Joe. He wants to be part of the game, has no problem sticking his thoughts out there, and all this other crap. Your players doesn't have to introduce you to the umpire. And do it a special way. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, umpires always annoy me because, and you've been hearing this for forever, you know, the veteran pitcher will get a different strike zone than the rookie pitcher. Rookie pitcher has to prove himself. Really? Where's that in the rule book?
Yeah.
So I really want to see that where it says, well, you know, the veteran pitcher, he has a 20-inch plate where the rookie pitcher has a 12-inch plate. But we see it over and over again. And it's the most frustrating thing. It's one of the big reasons why, hey, I can't wait till they get rid of the home plate umpire. I mean, they go to some kind of computerized strike zone. This way it's fair for everybody.
For its credit to West, though, in that same article, it was on Yahoo Sports. I can't remember who wrote it, so apologies there. But in any event, kudos to him for embracing replay. He said it's really important. He said it helps them be better at their jobs, and he's embraced it. He has embraced it from the beginning. They always used to use it to sharpen their skills, and now it's a part of the game. So he said the goal is to get everything right. So stick that in your cap, Joe Maddon. So not sure if you got a chance to see the Bogarts play. It was a little confusing. To me, I didn't think it was an egregiously bad call, but John Farrell was obviously not happy with it because it didn't go his way.
Yeah, I guess, and that's the most important thing. You know, get the calls right with replay. Some umpires had no problem with it; they realize it'll help them. Because if I'm an umpire, and listen, I referee men's hockey games, you know, it's not the same thing, obviously. But the last thing I want is a call that's obviously that I made it incorrect. It's replayed in sports on 18,000 times a day. Everybody knows I blew it. I'd much rather find out right away, oh, they fixed the call, fine, everything's right in the world.
Very true. So just a couple of things, just taking care of business and some things, you know, that happened this week, transactions, injuries, we'll take care of those in the next few minutes. You know, George, we'll get to this in the next segment, but I saw that K-Rod was released here in the last couple of days, and obviously bad times for him. He started as a closer, certainly on my team and on many others, but the Tigers released Francisco Rodriguez.
Yeah, that sort of had to happen. He was horrible. It's funny, or at least ironic. He just bitched about maybe 10 days ago that he wanted to be used in more high leverage situations. Well, maybe he can get that in the independent league because he was bad. Yeah. He was about as bad as you can get. And that Robinson Cano Grand Slam was Thursday night, might have been Wednesday night, was I guess the last straw here.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and he's not hitting his locations at all. I guess he's still not old. He's in his mid-30s. I think his career's done. But maybe someone else gives him a shot here. He'll need to learn how to be a pitcher, which is you got to hit locations, got to get the ball down the zone. You cannot be throwing, you know, an 89-mile-per-hour fastball with an 82-mile-per-hour change right down the middle and think you're going to keep batters off balance. Not going to happen. That ball is going to go a long way.
So back in 2002, when the Angels won, K-Rod was their secret weapon. And I remember going to one of the Yankees-Angels playoff games, and this guy comes out of the bullpen. And at the time, I remember looking up, and his season stats, I can remember it clear as a bell, were like 5 2/3 innings pitched. So nobody had any idea who he was. He had barely pitched in the regular season. But he comes out here, and he comes out to the mound, and he murders the Yankees. Like, nobody could touch him. He was just firing, striking people out, and the game was over. He locked it up, and whatever threat there was, the Yankees had set at the time, was done, and they lost that game. And he was a huge secret weapon throughout that season, and obviously for years to come for various teams. But sort of a bummer to see him released, but as you said, maybe he figures it out and catches on somewhere, but it's not looking good at the moment.
No, and I doubt he figures it out someplace else. Always a chance there, but I think his career is done. I still like the fact that he complained about his role. I mean, listen, Cameron, you couldn't get anybody out. Your ERA is almost 7, and you're complaining about your role? You're lucky you have a job.
Yeah.
Well, had a job in this case.
Yeah. A couple of other names that I saw, you know, Chris Young got DFA'd. Chris Carter from the Yankees, I think that was a long time coming. He got DFA'd this morning, George, or last night, whenever it was. So a couple other names. Doug Fister, pitcher from a little notoriety a couple of years ago. He's claimed off waivers by the Dodgers. Might be a reaction to the Urias news. Anyway, we'll talk some more injuries. Get to George's closer report after the break. Mike and George back after this. Back in the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike and George. You should be listening to us on the Fantasy Sports Radio app in case you're streaming it through mobile websites or PC. I mean, what are you doing here? It's 2017. So download the app and take the world's premier 24/7 Fantasy Sports Radio Network with you wherever you go. Just download it in the iTunes Store on Google Play. Listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can listen to us, Tony Cicada. You can listen to the show after this is Tony and Cha-Cha. That's Fantasy Bagels of Baseball. And then on your app, wherever you're walking around, if you're on the treadmill, you can listen to Weekend Fantasy Update. That's with the Fantasy Jesus, Joe Galena. How did he get that nickname? Anyway, Frank Stanfill and Mike Florio. And then after that, you're going to get NASCAR, Fantasy... I'm sorry, I'm messing up the name of the show. Scott Engel and Sean Engel talking NASCAR for an hour. Anyway, those are all the shows you can listen to. So download the app in iTunes Store on Google Play and listen to all that fun content. So, George, I barely got through that read. I tried to do it on the fly. It was a mess. So, in any event...
Before you go on, Mike, yes. I wanted to mention one thing about... I just found it... I don't want to say I found it funny, but I tweeted last night watching the Yankee game, watching the 10th inning, and you see Chris Carter come up. It's first and third, one out, and we all know what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
Matt Bush was still pitching. He was going to strike out. We all knew that. And I'm thinking, what is Girardi doing? Why isn't he pitch hitting for him? This seemed to me, and I tweeted this out at the time, that he was setting Carter up. And what I mean by that is he was letting Brian Cashman know that I have nothing else on the bench here. I have to put this man up in this situation, and we all know he can't get the job done.
Yeah.
You know, that's just what it seemed. And he had Romine and Mason Williams on the bench. Romine's your backup
Romine
catcher.
Romine and who was there?
Mason Williams.
Got it.
Yeah, so Romine was on the bench. Mason Williams was on the bench. Gary Sanchez was at third base. I mean, Girardi could have been sleeping at the wheel, too, because Gary Sanchez should have been pinch run for. Right? You don't worry about your cat. You know, Gary Sanchez losing an at-bat when he's at third base at less than two outs. You have to take him out of there so he can score on that shallow fly ball, and Mason Williams can run. So that was, like I said, Girardi maybe sleeping at the wheel.
Do you think he's nervous that this game could go really long and he's going to need, you know?
You can't manage that way. You got to play to win now, and you had a chance to win that game now, and you did.
That's true.
Torres came through with a clutch single. But like I said, so he may be sleeping at the wheel. But the first thing I'm thinking of, this is a message to Cashman that this is the best I can do in this situation. I can't put up Williams. You know, which you could have, because then I don't have a first baseman. You know, I can't put in a row mine because then I lose my backup catcher. You know, so
bottom line is Williams could have been used strange. In two different roles there, and he didn't use him at all.
Yes. It could have been Girardi sleeping at the wheel, but that's the same thing I thought of, too. Mason Williams could have pinch run at the very least, and he maybe want to have him hit for Carter anyway, so he gives himself an extra chance to
win. I think
win.
It's a great point to bring up, and I think you're right. I think he was actually putting Chris Carter on the pedestal and saying, buddy, this is for your job. You get a hit, you're good to go. You strike out, it's going to be plain for the GM to see. So have they made a move yet to backfill that position for Carter? Are you expecting somebody to come up? Or
they need a starting first base, and I assume it's going to be Tavon Austin.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked Tyler. If it's not. They don't really –
Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler. Tavon. Oh, that's
right. It's football season.
God. It has to be Tyler Austin, who is not great. He once was a top prospect. He's not any longer. He's an okay guy now.
Oh, yeah, it is.
He can't do much worse than
that
Carter.
That was the move. Recalled from Scruton Wilkes-Barre this morning. So.
Man, they had no other choice. So he'll start every day for you fantasy owners in deeper leagues. He's not someone you really want in a 10 or 12 team league. You got to be looking at AL only or deeper than 12.
Yeah. Okay. So, interesting. Good analysis there. So, one guy's name that I saw earlier this week, which will lead us right into the closer report, was that Neftali Feliz, as part of the Chris Young DFA. Neftali Feliz was signed by the Royals as to add to their bullpen. So, that being said, you know, guy, former Brewers closer, now he's part of the Royals bullpen. We still don't know what's going to happen with the Royals. A couple of weeks back, we thought they were done for it, but that AL Central division is still kind of tight. By the way, the Twins picking up a nice win last night over the Indians, keeping it tight, despite the fact that people expect the Indians to pull away from it. So, that being said, George, Neftali Feliz, not really somebody you're looking to pick up, but tell us about the rest of the closer situation. It looks like Zach Britton is on his way back.
Yeah, Britton should be back end of the month, early July, within 10 days. You'll have Britton back. So, once again, great news for our fantasy owners there. Not so good for Brad Bach owners because, listen, that's it. Goodbye. He's not going to get many saves. Now, Brock could still – I wouldn't release Brock automatically. Just like I said last time when this happened, I wouldn't release him automatically. You never know. You want to see Britton pitch and pitch well before you get rid of him to make sure he is healthy. Plus, Brock, at the very least, could protect your ratios. Now, he's not Andrew Miller. He's not Dylan Batanz as far as that, but he's not bad either. So, like I said, you may want to hold on to him for an extra, a couple of outings to make sure Britton's okay there. So that's what's going on there. Other than the news that's going on, Bedrosian has come back, activated actually last Saturday, but his first appearance wasn't until Tuesday. Yet, he's not closing right now, and now Street's been activated. I got to tell you, Mike, I'm curious to see what Mike Socha does, because you never know how he's going to handle the closer role. He's sort of, placated to Street in the past. Maybe he does again. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe Bedrosian is only put the seventh inning because those weren't really going to be saved games. You want to get him some work? I'm curious. We know Chapman's back for the Yankees. Not pitching well, but he's the closer. Nothing you can do there. Pittsburgh Pirates, they can say all they want that it's between Rivero and Nicasio. It's Nicasio. It's Rivera. He's the closer you want. And they're doing it over and over again. And they're not afraid to have him pitch multiple innings and saves. So that could be a problem. He pitched an inning and two-thirds last night. Got the save against St. Louis. So I actually ended up with the win, not the save. Which means you could lose a save opportunity today. It's the only thing I don't like about that as far as fantasy is concerned is you may not get those back-to-back saves. Washington is a complete disaster. And we see it over and over again.
Matt Albers picked up the win last night. Bryce Harper walked it off last night with a base hit, but Matt Albers picked up the win in extra innings.
Yeah, I think what's going on here, I think they know they're going to win the division, right? They have a huge lead in the division. So I think they're hoping the price comes down. It's not going to. It never does. So I think they're going to hope. If it doesn't come down, fine. We'll get our closer July 31st or that week around the deadline. Maybe it'll be Robertson. Maybe they're hoping a more of a top-notch closer. Maybe they feel like if they're going to pay the price that it's going to cost for a closer, they want to get a top-notch guy. So maybe they're hoping someone like Alex Colome and Tampa Bay falls out of the race, which will probably happen. So maybe they wouldn't mind paying for him, who could be a dynamic closer. I could see that being the point, too. But I'm wondering what Washington's waiting for here. And they actually need more than a closer. They need a closer and some bullpen help.
Well, here's a question, but here's something to consider. You're right. The price is probably not going to change dramatically, but there isn't one guy on the market or last year there's two. The Yankees had them both. I guess you could throw Melanson in there as well. So there were a few guys out there that were going to demand big prices. The guys that are available this year are guys that you would like as a piece, but we've even said that David Robertson, if he got acquired, wouldn't necessarily be the closer for any team that acquires him. He's not at the level that the guys we just mentioned are. So whether you get Kelvin Herrera or David Robertson or Alex Colome, is the price really going to change dramatically, and is there a big difference between those three? So they probably could wait it out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does make sense. But once again, the price isn't going to come down. Yeah. And everybody knows Washington needs this, so they're going to have to give up. You're right. Is it? This is not Andrew Miller. This is not Aroldis Chapman, and not Melanson. He's not in that league, but not Melanson either. But Robertson is going to get. Well, Chicago's going to get pretty close to what they want for Robertson. If you're going at the Colome, you're going to pay a hefty price. Colome is really good. He's sort of maybe the best closer that we don't know. Yeah. He plays with Tampa Bay, and they don't get many opportunities there. Mm-hmm. So that could be interesting. Other closer news, by the way, was Cody Allen. It was strange with Terry Francona. We've since found out that Cody Allen was put on paternity leave. So maybe that played a part in this. But he said he wanted to give Andrew Miller a break by putting him in the closer role.
I don't get that.
Now, I sort of get the logic. I get the logic here because if you put him in the closer role, A, then you're only using him in a closing situation, so there could be times there's no save situation, Miller gets the days off. It also means you're probably not going to use him multiple innings.
You can't have discipline enough as yourself as a manager. It's Terry Francona. Like, to not throw him more than an inning, whether it's the eighth or the seventh or whatever.
I agree with you. It didn't make a lot of sense, but that's I can see if that's where he's going with this. Allen's now back from paternity leave, so maybe this goal gets put back into its normal access starting today. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Who knows? But that should be interesting there.
So
but
weird.
You're right. It didn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. Oakland, Santiago Casilla was out a game or two, got hit with a batted ball during the game last Saturday, but he's fine. The Giants have to come out and actually say that they will not be trading Mark Melanson at the trade or by the trade deadline. Really? So you're not going to trade a closer that you owe $50 million to who's pitching terrible? Oh, okay, good to know. Thank you for that little information there. He had no chance of going anywhere anyway.
So one thing real quick, just talking about like the Robertson, Herrera, Colome market, do you think Colome demands a higher price than anybody right now?
If he becomes available.
Right.
Herrera is pretty close, too. But also, KC, I didn't put Herrera in this list here, but is KC a seller now?
Yeah.
Also, they're playing very well.
Yeah, like the Twins won last night. The Twins got beat up by the Indians last week. They come out last night. They win the game. They're only a couple of games back. So it's really not a huge difference right now. Obviously, we expect the Indians to pull away eventually, but it hasn't happened yet. And, you know, they haven't been a perfect team this year by any stretch.
No, they have injury problems, right? I mean, Salazar hasn't pitched well, so maybe that's not going to work out there. It's funny how things work. Yeah, we thought KC for sure would be sellers, just a matter of time. Goodbye Hosmer, maybe Kane, Herrera, anything else is not nailed down. And now they're not going to be buyers, but maybe now they hold on here, see if they can make a move in this American League Central, which is weaker than we expected.
Give George props here. He said about Frankie Rodriguez decided to complain about his role in the bullpen after putting together a few solid outings, and manager Brad Ausmus declared that he would use K-Rod in more high-leverage situations. I'm not sure how smart this is. And then later says, I don't see how he could possibly believe he deserves to pitch in close games. Well, K-Rod, happy trails, buddy. DFA'd and possibly looking for work somewhere else. Somebody could use him. I mean, Neftali Feliz got signed. He's a lot younger. I don't know.
Yeah, Feliz still has an arm. Still throwing the ball in the 90s. So
that's true.
K-Rod, I'm not sure K-Rod would get a speeding ticket on the LIE right now.
Okay, coming back for the last segment of the hour, it's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, quick segment here before we get to the top of the hour. Gary Davenport coming up at 9:09. I know it's a random number, but that's when we start the segment. What do you want me to do? We're going to talk some football with him. We're going to talk football a lot in the next hour.
My favorite number.
909 is my favorite number?
My favorite number.
Oh, it is? Why is that? Greg Nettles? Is that a Greg
there
Nettles
you go.
Style?
Look at that.
Yeah. Well, he's my favorite player, too, growing up, so I know him quite well. I haven't gotten a chance to meet him. Good guy. So a couple of injuries, George. The Freddie Freeman thing is crazy. He's coming back a lot earlier than anticipated, and he's in the process of making a move to third base, a position he hasn't played in more than a decade. Obviously, Matt Adams there now at first, so they're making the move with Freddie Freeman to go back to third coming off this injury. Kind of curious, right?
Kind of? Yeah. Sure. Kind of curious. I think this is nuts. I mean, you have Freddie Freeman. You have one of the better players in the game. You're moving him across the diamond.
Yeah, I don't get it.
And Freddie Freeman's a big man. Yeah, this is not somebody. I don't see this working out. I understand you got Matt Adams. You want to keep his bat in the lineup. I get that. But shouldn't you have thought about this when you traded for Matt Adams? I think we all knew Matt Adams.
Yeah, it's not like he's
it's the same problem St. Louis has.
Yeah.
Getting him on the field.
Yeah, it's not like Freddie Freeman tore his ACL and he was going to be out for the year. Like, he broke his wrist, and yeah, it was a serious injury, but even the worst timetables, he was going to be back at some point this season.
Yeah, like I said, the cost to acquire Adams was cheap, so you didn't lose anything, and you got your first baseman replaced. Maybe you didn't expect Adams to hit like this, but we all knew Adams was a good ball player, just had no place to play. You know, that's what it was in St. Louis. So I'm curious to see how they're going to work this out. They're going to put your best player at third base, coming off an injury. This doesn't seem to be all that bright to me, you know, and it's certainly not something I would do. But hey, what do I know? I don't run a team.
Colton Juan looks like he's on the mend. Said he's going to be ready to join the team sometime in the week leading up to the All-Star break. So fairly good news there for Colton Juan. Won't be an extended DL stint.
Yay. I mean, fantasy-wise, I don't think this is all that big news. Good for Colton Juan to get back on the field. I've got him in it's a deep league. It's 16 teams, 40-man rosters, so he might help me out a little bit in the middle infield when I desperately need somebody. Just not the same player he was a couple of years ago. You know, Diaz came in, took his job, and Juan is just became more of a free swinger. That's really what his problem was. He swings, had that old 11th commandment, thou shalt not pass without being swung at.
Ryan Braun and Jonathan Villar both expected to join the team during its current road trip. So both of them coming back off injury, despite Villar's disappointing season, he could be somebody to keep an eye out for. Yes,
absolutely. He has been disappointing. Someone asked me yesterday to rank these three second basemen in order, Mike. So I'll ask you the same question: Villar, Pham, and now I can't remember the other one. Odor, Villar, Pham, and Odor. How would you rank them? Rest of the season, fantasy wise.
Villar was so bad, we had a level of expectations for him. It's almost like I've been having people hit me up for Manny Machado trades. I almost see it the same way. Like, I suffered through the bad part of it. It can't be this bad the rest of the season. So from an upside perspective, I almost feel like Villar would be at the top of that list.
I think the way I put it, well, it depends on if I want power or speed. If it's speed, then I want Villar. If it's power, I'll take Odor. And I'll put the other one second. I had Pham third. But they've all been somewhat disappointing. Pham was actually, I guess, hasn't been disappointing. But I wonder about his playing time status once everyone is healthy.
Yeah. So, really curious. The only other piece of news I saw on baseball that's worthy is it's just crazy. The soap opera in Queens with Asdrubal Cabrera getting moved from shortstop to second. Now he's demanding a trade.
How has crazy. The guts to complain.
What's that?
When did you become a good shortstop, Asdrubal?
Yeah.
You have about as much range as a Daisy air rifle, and you're not even catching the balls that'll hit right at you.
Yeah, I just... Look, that place... We use the term dumpster fire a lot, but, man, is it not more appropriate than the New York Mets in 2017? All right, folks, turn the page. Talking football in the next hour. It's Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Join us for hour number two on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's the Saturday edition. I'm Mike Blewett. Here with George Kurtz. You can hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. Give us a call today at 84-FNTSY if you like. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. We're going to have Gary Davenport joining us in about 6 or 7 minutes. And we'll talk about all things regarding fantasy football. He specializes in IDP, in fantasy football, but he writes about everything. So he writes for Bleacher Report, Fantasy Sharks, and IDP happens to be a specialty of his. But I'm going to ask him some general questions about the Browns and other stuff. He's an Ohio native. So, George, big news, I guess, yesterday, while it's not fantasy-related, Derek Carr becomes the highest-paid quarterback in the league, $25 million a year. Obviously, there's, you know, the way contracts are structured. He's got the highest average annual salary. Andrew Luck technically could have more guarantees, but kudos to Derek Carr, you know, second-round pick, and the guy has nailed it. He's become the franchise quarterback for the Raiders for the foreseeable future and hopefully for them for a very long time. So big news for Carr, obviously.
Yeah, we knew this was coming. Like I said, I don't get all upset about these contracts.
Me neither.
It doesn't mean Carr is the best. I mean, simply always got to make the most money. Must be the best quarterback. It's not the way it works. You know, Matthew Stafford is going to beat this contract in a couple of months or yep. next season, whatever it might be, because he's the next guy up in line. Mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins might beat them both next year. It's just being a free agent at the right time.
That's right.
Doesn't mean you're better than Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, or anybody else. It's just being a free agent at the right time here. I have Carr. He's in my top 10, but lower top 10 as far as fantasy is concerned. I think quarterback is deep. As I've been discussing with Matt Wodeker and Corey Parson couple of weeks, I'll wait forever on a quarterback in drafts. I can wait till round 11, round 12, and get that Kirk Cousins, get that Marcus Mariota, and I'll be fine rather than take a Drew Brees or an Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady in round 3 or round 4. I'm waiting forever on quarterbacks this year.
So on the Raiders front, what are your expectations? I mean, they were really good last year. Carr suffered the unfortunate injury. They suffered two quarterback injuries, and Matt McGloin was in there, and then it was, gosh, who's that guy's name? Connor Cook was in there for the playoff game. So your expectations for the Raiders this year, and which Raider is it that you most want to own based on where they're going? We got Cooper, Crabtree, we got, you know, a bunch of different options there. So who's the Raider you're most likely to own, or could it be Carr because you're willing to wait and take a chance on somebody like him? It's not much of a chance,
by the way.
Carr will
certainly be an option.
Yeah.
I can tell you who it won't be, and that's Marshawn Lynch. I'm not taking Marshawn Lynch third round. I think people are overvaluing, just assuming that a year after he retired, away from football for a year, wasn't good in his last year at Seattle, got hurt, he's all of a sudden going to be the Marshawn Lynch of old. I understand the offensive line is much better, and it is. You know, so he'll have technically more room to run here. But this seems to me to be an injury waiting to happen here. I'm not touching Marshawn Lynch in my third round of drafts, so I won't have him in a lot of leagues. Crabtree is somebody I'll have. Carr is someone I'll have. Cooper, I may not have him either.
Yeah. I think I could see myself having Crabby or Cooper if he falls a little bit. But I'm going to let somebody else handle Marshawn Lynch. Kudos to you if it works out, but I'm going to wait. Gary Davenport back after the break. It's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Stuff. Well, Bob O'Reilly. George, you'd like to rock out to this. Good stuff.
Absolutely.
I should have waited. I'm not like a professional DJ, so I should have like waited to hit the post there and wait to, for them to come in on drums, but I'm not that good at that yet. So, in any event, we got Gary Davenport coming up here in a second. To those of you listening to us on the app, thank you for downloading it. Thank you for listening. For those of you listening to us streaming through the website, please download the app. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear us here every Saturday and Sunday morning. That will continue for a while. As we get closer to the season, schedule's going to change a little bit. I'll remain every Saturday and Sunday morning. George is going to switch it up. He'll do Saturdays with me. Sundays he'll be doing sort of game day stuff during the games. I'm pre-game. George is during the game. So that'll be a fun kind of change of pace for you, George, right?
It'll be different, right? It'll be the first time in forever that I actually won't be home watching all the games. I'll be in studio, I think, from 1 to 5 with Joe Galina and I think Greg Sussman. And then from 5 to pretty much whenever I decide I want to go home with Matt Modica and Chris Meany, I believe. That's the tentative schedule.
Well, good stuff. So we'll welcome in now a guy that loves to watch football as well, and he'll be watching it wherever he damn pleases. It's Gary Davenport from Fantasy Sharks. You can catch him on Twitter at IDP Sharks. He also writes for Bleacher Report. I'm looking at his article right now. So, Gary, welcome to football season. It's just a couple of weeks away from training camp.
Oh, don't you love it? It's wonderful. I've watched far too much baseball over the last month or so. I'm ready for some football.
No such thing.
Well, good stuff. You know, I've been looking at a couple of the things that you've written here. I was just kind of, you know, the first general question I want to ask you, and I ask you this simply because you're a Cleveland native, you're a Browns fan, you're a long-suffering guy, but somebody that has caught a lot of buzz, and frankly, I wrote a lot about offensive lines this offseason for Roto Experts. the Browns have dramatically improved the offensive line from last year, and now Isaiah Crowell, who had some really positive metrics, is becoming a player rising up draft boards, and people have a lot of positive thoughts about. I do, George does, and now I'm actually starting to get nervous because too many people are thinking positively about him. So what are your thoughts on Isaiah Crowell going into the season?
You more or less just took the words right out of my mouth. I like Crowell this year. You have to love the addition of Kevin Zeitler, J.C. Treader. I mean, you add him to a healthy Joel Bitonio. Obviously, Joe Thomas is a monster. You have the makings of a very stout offensive line that's going to open some holes for Crowell. But like you said, everyone is liking Isaiah Crowell right now. And it's as his ADP climbs and climbs and climbs and climbs, we're going to reach that tipping point where the value's just not there anymore. I mean, I like it. When I could get him as a mid-range, even toward lower-end RB2, I'm loving that. Now we're talking high-end RB2. I'm not loving that as much. And if the rate things are going, he could creep into the back-end RB1 territory by the end of the summer. And there, I mean, you're drafting him awfully close to his ceiling.
You know, Gary, we'll stick with the Cleveland theme here. This is a question I've actually probably been dying to ask you for a few months here. What happened with Terrell Pryor, and why is he not a Cleveland Brown anymore? It's not like the Washington gave him a huge contract.
Somebody misjudged something. I don't know if Pryor had his heart set on a long-term deal, and the Browns just were not willing to give that up. So Pryor got turned off by that and decided, that's fine, I'm leaving regardless, and wound up taking, you know, just a one-year offer from the Redskins. Or whether the Browns just completely misjudged his market. It was a great offseason for Cleveland for the most part. If there's one thing I point to that makes me nuts, it's that. It's that you let Terrell Pryor leave on a one-year deal. You essentially pay, if you're willing to give Kenny Britt the money they gave him, I would hope they would have offered Pryor at least that. Maybe it wasn't enough to get it. But you can't look at Terrell Pryor to Kenny Britt as any kind. I don't even call that a lateral move. That, to me, was a bit of a downgrade. Now here we are. Corey Coleman's already limping around on a bad hamstring. And, you know, here we go again with the passing targets in Cleveland, and it just makes it that much harder for whoever they trot out there at quarterback this year to develop. So I'm trying to have a measure of optimism regarding the Browns this year. It's dangerous, but I'm trying. I just keep telling myself things could be worse. It could be the Jets.
You could be the Jets. I was about to say that. So I'll give you a respite from having to hem and haw over the Browns for the next couple of minutes. But you wrote a nice article here about a standout of every team's offseason so far. And you had some interesting guys in there. And one guy that changed places, and we're going to be, I think everybody's going to be excited about him in PPR leagues yet again, is Danny Woodhead in Baltimore. Now, they have a whole bunch of guys there in the backfield, but it seems like the only guy whose role we know is solidified is Woodhead. So how big a part of this offense do you think he's going to be, and can he match his biggest successes that he had in San Diego?
If OTAs were any indication, he's going to be a very big part. I mean, there was a writer for the Baltimore Sun, I believe it was, who said he was just blown away by how often Flacco was looking Woodhead's way in practice. You know, he looked, dump it off to Woodhead. Look, and I think we're going to see a lot of that drop back. If the receivers aren't open, I'll just dump it to Woodhead. I don't know that necessarily we're going to see 2015 Danny Woodhead that caught, I think it was 81 passes and finished as a top five running back in PPR league. I do think that it's entirely possible we could see a Danny Woodhead that's saved a top 20 running back in PPR leagues, even maybe top 15. And given where his ADP is right now, unless it climbs considerably, I'm going to have a lot of shares of Danny Woodhead. I know that two out of the last 3 years have essentially been wiped out by injuries. I know he's over 30. I know he's coming off an ACL tear. But if I can get him as a low-end RB3, I'm willing to roll those dice, personally.
Yeah, I think I would be willing to roll those dice as well. Matt Modig is very high on Woodhead, but I do have some doubts here. What I'm asking, Gary, what is your philosophy on quarterbacks this year? Assuming you're playing in a one-quarterback start league, not a super flex, not a two-star start quarterback, are you someone who's going to spend a third, fourth-round pick on a Breeze, a Rodgers, Brady, or are you going to wait to look for value later on and load up on running backs and wide receivers?
next time I spend an early pick on a quarterback will be the first time. There's just too much depth. I mean, you got, I think I was looking at that ADP information at Football Diehards last night, I believe. Phillip Rivers is coming off at 15th among, he's not even coming off as a starter. He's coming off as a backup. This is a guy that threw for 4,400 yards and 30-something odd touchdown passes last year and finished, I think, sixth. Why would you? I mean, I get that Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback, but the advantage he gives you a quarterback over one of those lower-end guys is not as big as the hole you're going to dig yourself into at wide receiver or running back. You're going to be playing catch-up the whole rest of the draft. You have to hit on a later round running a Woodhead or a guy like you're going to have to save yourself from what you've done at quarterback. No, thank you. I love Drew Brees. Tom Brady's great. Aaron Rodgers, yada, yada, yada. Please, by all means, folks, help yourselves because that means that there's more backs and receivers that will be available to me, and I'll get me some Phillip Rivers or some Eli Manning or Ben Roethlisberger. The quarterback is even deeper now than it was 2 or 3 years ago, and it was 2 or 3 years ago.
I totally agree. George and I have kind of been pushing this offseason to get more people involved in super flex leagues and two QB leagues in some instances in order to up the strategy quotient. Phil Rivers is the perfect example. With the additions that were made for them this offseason, the offensive line isn't totally fixed, which actually says a lot about how good Melvin Gordon's season was last year. But Rivers is a guy, as you said, he could put up those numbers again easily, and the fact that the defense isn't completely fixed yet, they could be like a New Orleans West, and Phil Rivers have to throw even more than he did last year.
Oh, yeah, it's a perfect storm. You've got improved offensive line, improved receiving core. The defense is going to be better, but not great. I've been beating this drum for years, and this year I'm beating it harder than ever. It's just crazy to draft a quarterback. We've had, just in the last couple of years, we've had guys like Mariota and Jameis Winston and now Dak Prescott added to an already deep player pool. I mean, you could wait until every other team in your league has drafted a starting quarterback, and there are still going to be perfectly viable weekly starters available to you.
There is. Gary, now you're an IDP guy. When I think IDP, I think of Gary Davenport. All three of us play in a deep IDP league. Well, how would you advise a new owner? Our new league to set up an IDP league rather than, you know, we have 11 starters. How would you advise a new league, though, to start IDP wise?
You know, I think a fairly good startup setup is to go with two starters at defensive lineman, either two or three starters at linebacker, a couple starters at defensive back, and then maybe a flex guy. So you're starting seven, maybe eight guys. That way, there's enough IDP starters that it has an impact on the league, and it's not an afterthought like team defenses are. But it's not, you know, the dynasty league that you're talking about that we're all in together where IDPs have a massive impact. And if you don't know what you're doing on defense, it can really put you at a disadvantage. So that's generally the beginner setup.
Good stuff.
And this is the year.
It's good stuff, Gary. We got
startup year where you
I gotta head out here. Come back with us after the break, Gary. We'll get in the rest of that answer. IDP Sharks, Gary Davenport.
Thank you.
We're back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Gary Davenport staying with us here through the break. We were talking a little bit, Gary, just about how to set up IDP leagues. You said let's go two linemen, two linebackers, a couple of defensive backs, and maybe a flex. It gives you a sense of obviously how that can impact the league versus some of the offensive players you'd be starting. Obviously, you could probably start lower than that and one at each level and then a flex if you want, you know, just so people get used to the league and build it out from there. I think it's a good idea to kind of start slow. And I know you're involved in a defense-only mock right now. In that mock, John Rodabaugh picked J.J. Watt number one overall. You had just recently written an article about maybe there's some crack in the armor about J.J. Watt being the number one IDP player this year. Still a crazy dominant NFL player, but maybe there's somebody ready to take the mantle from him this year.
Yeah, I can understand. Watt's still my number one. I can understand why some people are reluctant, given both the fact that he missed most of last year with an injury and the nature of that, you know, two back surgeries in just about a year. I can understand the nervousness. But the ceiling that J.J. Watt provides, if he's on, what he's shown to be able to do, I mean, 2015, he had over 75 total tackles and 17 and a half sacks. And people complained that it was a down year compared to what he was able to do in 2014. Love Danielle Hunter coming off the season he had in 2016. Gotta love Joey Bosa coming off. The rookies aren't supposed to be able to perform like that on the defensive line in their first NFL season. And then obviously Khalil Mack in the conversation if your IDP league still gives him positional eligibility as a defensive lineman. But Watt's still my guy. I will say this, though. This is the year you want to hit that defensive line early. Once you get toward about the 18 to 20 mark among defensive linemen when I'm looking at my rankings, that's right about the spot that I start to get a look on my face like I just had Taco Bell. There are guys that I just don't trust as weekly starters there. And if you've got two starters per team in a 12-team league, that means there are going to be teams that are left out. So my strategy this year is to try to get two of probably the top 15, two of the top 12 if I can. And I know that puts me a little behind at linebacker, but I like the depth there better this year. I feel like, you know, in the mid-30s there are some linebackers who can be decent weekly starters this year. Guys like Garen Lee in New York, who's going to be on the field 58 minutes a game, so he should see quite a few tackle opportunities.
Last time I went to Taco Bell was a few decades ago, and I spent the night on the porcelain throne, and I'm not going back anytime soon.
You're a better man for it, George.
So I can make tacos at home, guys. I can actually cook tacos. But, Gary, I asked you before the break about how would you like to set up your rosters for a new IDP league. How about a point system? I think people need to know, have an idea of what a point system they should garner. And by that, I mean when I start an IDP league, when I play with my guys, I want to make IDPs – I don't want to make them all. You pick a linebacker last round because they don't matter. I want to make it where they're integrated, where they're going to mean maybe not as much as a running back or a wide receiver, but I want them to have value, not just something you pick in round 16.
You know, I think if you go with, say, a point and a half for a solo tackle, maybe half a point or even three quarters of a point, if you don't mind having numbers that are a little odd for an assist, 4 points for a sack, 4 points for an interception, and, you know, 2 points for each side of a forced fumble and a fumble recovery. That scoring is going to lean a little bit toward tackle heavy, but the majority of IDP leagues do. And it's going to put the top IDPs are going to make it then. That's a fairly common scoring system I see. Usually I will weight things a little bit more than that, especially the big plays. Because, you know, I want, when I look at the top scorers for a season, you know, the top 25 players in the league, I want to see four or five IDPs in there. I want to see J.J. Watt. I want to see Landon Collins or Luke Kuechly. I want guys like Watt and Kuechly to be genuine considerations in the first two or three rounds of a draft. And in most IDP leagues, they're just not going to be, partly because you're not starting as many guys and partly because they just don't score as much as the offensive players. But that 1.54 split, it's a good starting place, in my opinion.
Gary, talking about, look, I was just reading through Fantasy Sharks. I saw that, you know, somebody highlighted the fact that David Harris moves over to the Patriots on a 2-year deal. He's a guy whose play was declining, but he was still picking up tons of stops because it was the Jets. And, you know, as you said, they're out there 58 minutes a game. So what kind of role do you expect for him at the Patriots?
I think he's probably just going to be a base down guy, a run stuffer. I mean, it's a great pickup from an NFL perspective for the Patriots, who seem to have had an okay offseason so far.
To stop there for one sec, you make a great point in stating that they had this offseason. And what's amazing to me is that it's a chess checkers situation because they are scouting guys that have played in the NFL as opposed to trying to scout all these rookies and rolling the dice or flipping a coin on them. They just acquired a whole bunch of guys that they've gotten to see play at the NFL level. Like, you know what? We make a couple of tweaks. Coney Ealy could be dominant. And David Harris, we know, is going to be out there for X number of downs. And Brandon Cooks is a great wide receiver already. So what do we need to do? We don't even need to develop these guys. We just have to teach them the system.
And then they turn around when they finally do get a draft pick in the 2017 NFL draft. Derek Rivers, that edge rusher they took out of Youngstown State, one of my favorite edge rush guys in the entire draft. He might take a little while to get acclimated to the NFL because the jump from the Penguins to the National Football League might be a little big. But his athleticism is off the chart. He is going 3 years from now, we're all going to be asking ourselves how the Patriots lucked into getting Derek. It's not luck.
And he's coached by Bo Pelini, who's like one of the most respected tactician coaches in the entire collegiate landscape, despite the fact that he coaches at FCS now. It's crazy to me. They just keep doing it.
Yeah, the Patriots, they're just so annoying. I'm just annoyed because I don't want to talk about things like going 16-0, but you look at that roster and you look at that division and you look at that schedule, and I mean, would 13-3 be a disappointment for the Patriots in 2017?
No. Patriots playing on another level. Gary, I got an interesting IDP question for you. Now, you and I have sort of, we've talked about this in the past before. We see in baseball, some official scorers, everything's a hit. You know, there's no such thing as an error. You see in hockey, everything's a shot on goal. You know, there'll be a scramble in front of the net, and all of a sudden there'll be the shots on goal goes from 16 to 22. In football, are there certain stadiums, certain official scorers that reward more tackles than others? And if so, where would you find this information? And does this change your draft strategy at all? In other words, do you move players up or down because you know the official scorer in Buffalo likes to, you know, offer a lot of extra tackles, a lot of extra half tackles than some other stadiums?
There are a couple IDP writers that track that. I think Ryan Seitzman might, Gene Bramall. I usually look at it a little bit. And maybe I'll have to just do an article about that this year now. But the king of the generous scorekeepers is that's Buffalo. The Buffalo scorekeepers, they will award a tackle if you tried. It's like a participation trophy. Everybody gets one. Which is why everyone's watching that Buffalo linebacker situation so closely right now, because they've got three guys essentially shooting for 2-3 down spots in Gerald Hodges that they just brought over, Preston Brown, the veteran, and Reggie Ragland coming back off the ACL injury. So it's going to be very interesting to see which two of those guys land every down rolls for the Bills, because whoever does land every down roll for the Bills will clean up. The Jets scorekeepers are fairly generous. Cincinnati's can be generous, but they have a tendency to lean toward assists over solo tackles. Same thing for Seattle. Los Angeles, the Rams fall at the other end of that spectrum, and this is something that has followed them from St. Louis. The Rams scorekeepers have apparently never heard of an assisted tackle because they don't award them. I mean, you'll see as many solos awarded in one game in Seattle as you'll see in a month in L.A.
Gary, just talking about IDP impact from some rookies. Obviously, the Browns get the number one overall pick in Myles Garrett, but, you know, a guy that's an edge rusher like that as a rookie, he's somebody that you, in a deeper league, are going to take a shot at, but it's difficult in shallower leagues to draft a rookie edge rusher as dominant as he may ultimately be. So I say all this to ask, who is the rookies that are going to see a big impact? I see somebody like Reuben Foster. You know, he plummets through the draft. I feel like he's going to play with his helmet on fire for the rest of his career because of what happened to him on draft day. Honestly, he did a lot of it to himself, but he's not Avontaze Burfict, where he had all kinds of issues on the field at Alabama. But Foster was dominant, so he could have been a top five pick by most accounts. So is it Reuben Foster? Is it Jamal Adams, because the Jets are going to be a mess? Who do you like as a rookie? Who's your top rated rookie?
Love Adams, because like you said, the Jets are going to be a mess, and we've seen a similar situation. Granted, their front four is a lot better, but the New York Giants last year, you have a very shaky linebacker core with a great safety playing behind them, and Landon Collins wound up being the number one overall scoring IDP in a lot of scoring systems. Jamal Adams is going to be in a similar situation. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be the number one overall guy, but I already have him in my top 10 among defensive backs right out of the gate. Jared Davis in Detroit is going to be a three-down middle linebacker from the day he steps onto the field. So you know the opportunities are going to be there, and the linebackers around him are not great. Reuben Foster could be that guy, but I wonder a little bit about an every-down role. I want to get a little bit farther into training camp and see kind of how they're shaking things out with him, Navarro Bowman, and Malcolm Smith, who they just handed quite a bit of money to come over in free agency. If Foster can land that three-down role, he'd be right there with Davis. Right now, I've got him ranked a little bit behind him. Hassan Reddick in Arizona is another guy to keep an eye on because apparently he has been very impressive in OTAs. Dan Buchanan just had ankle surgery. They're unsure if he's going to be ready for the beginning of the regular season. So Reddick has a chance to work into a starting role.
Good stuff. That's Gary Davenport. Give us two segments. We could probably do two more. You can catch him on Twitter at IDP Sharks. He writes for Bleacher Report and Fantasy Sharks. We'll have him back here all throughout the fantasy football season. Jared Davis is a great call. Keep him on your radar for your IDP drafts. It's Mike and George back to close out the show with the next couple of segments on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Trying to wait it out to see if we could get rocking out there, George. I got to learn my. You're better at music than me, especially old school stuff. See, look how long I would have had to have waited for to hit the post on this one and rock out. George is probably doing air guitar right now. That's why he's not talking, or maybe it's because I'm talking. But George, good stuff from Gary. There are the last couple of segments. We did some IDPs. We got some depression from Browns fans. We got it all.
There's nothing like following Gary on Twitter when Cleveland does something stupid, you know, because he's so all over
really
it. It's entertaining.
It is very entertaining.
Nicely. And listen, it's Cleveland. They do something stupid a lot.
Yeah, very true. I got to be honest. Like, I'm not going to be the guy that sits here and says, hey, watch out for the Browns, because it's not going to be that. But I'm telling you, they had a good offseason. Good. They fixed the offensive line to some extent. You know, you never know how that's going to work out, honestly. I did 4,000 words on offensive lines. The one constant I can possibly tell you, because it's really difficult to compare metrics from one to the other. There's a lot of good grading systems out there from Football Outsiders and Pro Football Focus. But the one constant you really see, whether it's the ultimate talent of the line or not, it's really just the consistency of the players playing together. So you bring back all five guys from one year to the next to the next. You tend to see an upward trajectory in play. So the Browns have added two new guys, but they were both highly sought after offensive linemen, J.C. Tretter and Kevin Zeitler. So they weakened the Bengals in the process, and the Packers are going to have to look for somebody to replace Tretter. But in that sense, you know, I think the Browns, they added Peppers and Njoku and Garrett, and all the three of those guys could be projects. They add Kaiser, and who's another project. But I just think, like, with the offensive line and Crowell there, we might actually see some fantasy value that isn't just a total flyer.
Yeah, I don't know if I could say they've had a good offseason. I mentioned the Terrell Pryor thing with Gary.
Yeah, that's a bad move.
And you don't have a quarterback yet. You passed on that again. Unless you think Kaiser's the man, but that's a project there. Maybe he starts this year because they have nobody else. You know, maybe you get the Sucker Sam or whoever else, the top quarterback coming out next year. And, I mean, I don't know. The only thing I might get on Gary about is, should you really be making the fun of the Jets if you're a Browns fan? I mean, you're pretty much in the same boat here. It's a sinking ship. And maybe that just tells you about the Jets, that the Browns fans are getting on you.
Yeah.
All right, because listen, if Brown fans are ragging you, something's wrong.
You know, I just feel like since we are here locally, sometimes you hear a lot of local opinions about the Jets. I feel like there's a sense of Jets fans are almost nervous that they're going to win a few games and miss out on this quarterback class, which is, you know, pretty deep this year, actually. I don't see any way that they to miss out on it. You know, the first five picks aren't going to be quarterbacks. First few could be. But I don't think they're going to miss out on it. They'll get one of these guys. Will they get the guy they want? Remains to be seen. But I think the Jets are doing what the Philadelphia 76ers did in basketball. We're going to deplete this roster of talent so much that whomever we put out there, it's going to be really unlike. We're going to have a really hard time winning games. It doesn't mean that those guys don't play hard, and it doesn't mean you'll see some standouts and even a couple of wins. But they're going to make it really hard for their team to win a bunch of games.
You think?
Yeah.
I mean, they stripped it down. I don't know how this is going to play in New York. I don't think it's going to be good at all because in some ways they've done the right thing.
I mean,
the team was going to be bad either way. Strip it down, get rid of it, don't pay the money, get a top draft pick, you move on from there. That's how you build in the NFL. But how this is going to play in New York should be extremely interesting with the media and the fans getting all over them. And if I'm Tom Bowles, does it even matter to me? Odds are, we finished 2-14. I don't care. This is not my problem. This is the GM and the organization that decided this. I'm probably done. I probably won't reap the benefit of this new number one pick, so it may not matter to him.
That's what's kind of weak about the whole situation, is Bowles is kind of following the plan. Do you think it's if you want to blame last year that the team quit on him and they bail on him and it's Todd Bowles' fault, be my guest. But that quarterback situation was a mess from over a year ago. They hadn't signed Fitz. Are they going to sign Fitz? Who are they going to do? I thought they sort of played that right, and they gave Fitz, you know, all that they could handle money-wise, and they didn't break the bank on him. And then he didn't play well, and nobody else played well. It probably is going to result in a regime change. It's kind of unfair to Bowles, though, because he's following the plan as laid out by the organization, right?
It is unfair, but if they wanted to make him part of the plan, would they give him a contract extension? Let him know, hey, it's not your fault. I think you're right. You know, the quarterback situation wasn't his problem. He didn't sign these guys. I mean, maybe he pushed for Ryan Fitzpatrick to come back here. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But it wasn't like anybody else on the roster was any better. They all got a shot, and they were all terrible. So, like I said, I think if he was part of the future, they would have given him that extension. Go, hey, we know this is going to be a rough year. We know it's not going to go good. You're going to take a lot of heat, a lot of crap from everyone. We're going to sign you, you know, two more years, whatever it is. We'll give you a chance under a new quarterback. But this, in my mind, is just saying, hey, you're going to eat it this year. You know, you're going to be on the front line. You're going to eat it, and then we're moving on.
Yeah, I mean, the best players on the Jets team are all in the front seven defensively. It's one of the worst staffed offenses I've seen in recent memory, certainly. After Matt Forte, whom is very much on the wrong side of 30, you don't really have a lot of people there. Tony Cicada hammered us a little bit last week. He thinks Bilal Powell is going to be really valuable, and I can see some value there. I just think that the offense is going to have such a hard time scoring points that Powell is just going to be like a, you know, I wouldn't call him a Theo Riddick type because he's going to carry the ball more, but I just don't know how ultimately successful you can be. And I just see too many people talking about Powell that I think his ADP is going to rise to the point where it might be a little too rich for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm interested in Powell as well. But my problem is going to be, you know, I've done the math, right? How many touchdowns are the Jets going to score? You know, at most, 1.5 per game? That's 24. Powell's not going to get 24. He's not going to get half those. Now you're talking a third. What can I rely on for 8 touchdowns? And I think even that might be a lot. Hell, I think 24 touchdowns for the Jets is a lot. So, you know, that's my one issue with Powell. But I do like him. PPR leagues, I am interested. He's a low-end running back, too, for me. So I do think he has value, yes.
Yeah. So moving on to some other players I want to talk about. Because Gary did a really nice, expansive article on Bleacher Report about who are the stars of the OTAs so far. And there's some names that pop out. Like with the Steelers, it's Justin Hunter, who is playing his tail off in OTAs, trying to make the team. Which, frankly, that's the reason he's playing his tail off, is because he's going to be their last wide receiver. The Steelers are good to go at that position, obviously, between Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant, Sammy Coates, Eli Rogers, Juju Smith-Schuster, second-round pick. So Justin Hunter would be the sixth wide receiver of that group. So I highlight that to say that he's picked out some interesting guys, but two things that he talked about in particular is that Tom Savage has been really good in Houston. So I ask you, they expended a bunch of capital in order to move up to take Deshaun Watson. Do you think Tom Savage could conceivably have this job going into the season?
I've always thought Savage would have the job to start the season. I think anything after that is sort of up in the air. But I think Savage, I think the idea for Houston is this. I think they know what they have here. Very good defense that'll keep you close in games. So you're going to go into the fourth quarter, you know, a lot of 17-14, 17-17, 20-17. And you're really within a field goal, a lot of games. So you want to go with the veteran quarterback or the guy who's been there before and knows the offense, who's not going to make mistakes. You know, if you go with Deshaun Watson, yes, he'll make the big play, but he also may make the big mistake. So I think that's what they're looking for here. I think while we saw from Savage last year is he's not, you know, he's never going to be a dynamic pro. You know, fantasy-wise, he's never going to reach a top 20 or anything like that. But he does know how to get Hopkins involved in the game. He does know how to throw the back shoulder fade. You know, so Hopkins will have a better year under Savage. Now, this all being said, this is Watson's job as soon as he proves he can handle it. I don't know if that's week one, week four, week eight, next year, but I think that's what's going to happen here. Long term, Watson is your answer. Watson is the guy who can bring you to the promised land. Savage can't. Savage is not going to beat New England. You know, I'm not sure Savage can beat some the lesser teams, Pittsburgh, Denver, Oakland. I doubt he can beat them right now. But he can get you there. But eventually you're going to need someone to get you over that hump. I sort of equated to what Buck Showalter did. You know, he took over the Yankees, took over the Diamondbacks. He got you to a certain level. But after that, you needed the next manager to get you over that hump. That's where I feel Savage is. He can get you there, but you'll need a more dynamic quarterback after that.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that O'Brien – well, I let me back off of that statement. Since he's done it before, he obviously will do it again. I just don't think it's ideal to play QB shuffle with a team that is arguably the second or third best team in the AFC and can compete for – an AFC championship and a Super Bowl title. Look, we all know how prohibitive a favorite the New England Patriots are, but it's going to be a boring season if we don't try to challenge them with some other teams. So that's my only doubt. Secondarily, we'll do a little bit quicker on this one. Paxton Lynch has been the star of the show as far as Gary is concerned for the Denver Broncos. So with that being said, the Broncos are a tough team for me to figure out fantasy-wise because of this QB situation. I don't know if it's going to be Lynch and Simeon. If I had to put my money down, I'd put it on Simeon. But if Lynch keeps pushing him, he's been the project guy. Is 1 year enough for him to have developed to take that job, George?
I think this is a pure training camp battle. You know, I agree with you. I think right now I sort of edge towards Simeon. If I had to draft one for some reason in a league, I would draft Simeon over Lynch, but I'd want Lynch too, and that's the problem. You know, if I'm playing in a two-quarterback or a Superflex league and I draft Simeon, well, now I got to grab Lynch too, right? Because I don't know what's going on. I'm not positive it's going to be Simeon, or I don't think it's going to be Simeon all year. And we've seen this with a lot of teams, right? So you just talked about Savage. You have Savage and it's a two-quarterback league. And you're going to want to have Watson as well. You know, say they were Cleveland, Kessler, and Kaiser. You're going to see this in a lot of teams here. It's a problem right now. I think, once again, Lynch was the guy they traded up for. You know, the guy they gave up gave up picks to go get. You got to think eventually they want him to take over the role. But if you're asking me who I think is in the best chance to win right now, yeah, I think it's Simeon. But once again, I think it's Lynch's job once he proves he can handle it. But he's certainly got to really prove it. Where in Houston, I think Watson just has to show he has the promise to do it. In Denver, I think Lynch has to outplay Simeon because we know what Simeon can do, and he can be a serviceable quarterback.
Yeah, it's going to make it really hard for me to be supremely confident in Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders as good as they are. And we'll get to the running back thing. That's a whole different kettle of fish. So George and I are back for the last segment before we hand it over to Fantasy Bagels Baseball on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. George and I wrapping it up here the next couple of minutes. After this, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball from 10 to 12. That's with Tony Cincotta and Cha-Cha. After that, 12 to 2, it's Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galena, Frank Stanfill, Mike Florio, and then it's Fantasy NASCAR, Father and Son Fantasy NASCAR Hour. I think that's it. I got it. Fantasy, I can't do it again. Fantasy Father and Son NASCAR Hour with Scott and Sean Engel. So there you go. George, I'm very happy with myself for getting that show's name right, which it's my own fault for not doing that properly. But in any event, what to talk about, George? There's many, many things we can talk about, but I pulled up an article a couple of days ago, Michael Fabiano from NFL.com, just talking about he's got different lists, got breakout lists and sleeper lists. And I know you always say we beat the sleepers into the ground so much during the course of the preseason that there's no sleepers by the time August rolls around. But that being said, he's got a few guys on here which we've talked about ad nauseum. We've talked about Kareem Hunt a ton. Martavis Bryant, he thinks, could be a sleeper. I wouldn't call him that. It's just a matter of how much you trust that he can stay on the field, right?
Yeah, I only Kareem Hunt, I get the sleeper status here. I don't see how Martavis Bryant's asleep unless people just forgotten about him. Mm-hmm. And this guy's done it before in the NFL. We know he can play. You said it. It's just a matter of can he stay on the field. If so, he's going to make big plays. What he does. Defense is going to worry about Brown. They're going to worry about Bell. Guess who they forget about? Maybe they'll be sleeping on him as well.
Yeah. You know, a guy that you and I both really liked a lot last year was Willie Snead. And there were times where we were like, man, I don't know if this is going to work out the way we wanted it. But by the end of the year, and it's not Roto, but by the end of the year, it was kind of what we thought. We thought maybe he'd actually be a little bit better than the year before. He caught three more passes in 2016 than he did in 2015. He had about 90 less yards and one more touchdown. So it's kind of a dead heat when it comes to PPR leagues for the most part. Do we think that he can ramp it up even more? Like, Michael Thomas is now the star of that passing offense. I don't think there's any doubt. But Brady Cooks isn't there anymore. Does Willie Snead pick up some more catches that have left via Brandon Cooks?
I think this is nothing but good news for Snead. Yeah. He's now the pure number two there. You know, probably Breeze. He might be Breeze's second target there after Thomas. There's a chance Fleener and Breeze get back on the same page. They certainly weren't there last year. But you mentioned no more Brandon Cooks. Defense is going to go over and above trying to stop Michael Thomas, stop him from making those big plays. You know, Adrian Peterson being there. No matter what you think about Peterson being there, he's still going to get respect from defenses. So once again, this could keep the safety closer to the line of scrimmage. No double coverage for Snead. I'm on board. You know, I think Snead is going to have a big, when I say big season, bigger than he did last year. You mentioned it pretty much is a dead heat the past 2 years. I think he outperforms what he did the last 2 years pretty easily.
I'm with you. He had over 100 targets the last 2 years, so you can lock it in that that's going to happen at least again. Say 30 more targets, give him 15 more catches. Throw another, you know, whatever that means. Average yards per catch is 13 on his career. You can do the math. 15 more catches times 13. We're looking, he's over 1,000-yard season. Throw a few more touchdowns on there. That's a really good season. That's a wide receiver two range, and I think Willie Snead often isn't thought about it that way. So, look, this defense still isn't fixed, George. They've addressed some things. It's not fixed. It's going to be 5,000 yards again for Drew Brees. They're going to put up a ton of points. They're going to be DFS options, and it's going to be an offense that you can rely on. Clearly, we have some questions about how the running back carries are going to be divvied, but points are going to be no shortage in New Orleans.
Agreed. They're going to score points. It's going to be the same team we've seen New Orleans for a while now. A lot of 35, 34 games.
I'm in. That's what's fun about fantasy. Give me all the points. George will be right here in this studio all season long watching these games. I will as well. So, Mike and George, we're out. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Fantasy Bagels and Baseball next on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening, folks.